Welcome to Ask Prof Brewer. I'm David Brewer, and I'm a pastor and teacher at Emmaus Bible Church in West Bend, Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's session, instead of doing the Book of Revelation, I'm going to do a couple messages on Palm Sunday and the Triumphal Entry. So let's get into that. So this particular series is called The Hosannas of Palm Sunday, Understanding the Crowd's Response. So before we look at the passages pertaining to the triumphal entry, let's do an overview of the Passion Week. So in the Friday, a week before Good Friday, Jesus arrived in Bethany. And we see that in John chapter 12, verse 1. So Jesus arrived in Bethany 6 days before the Passover to spend some time with his friends, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. That must have been a blessed time. So on the following Tuesday evening, while Jesus was still in Bethany, Mary anointed his feet with costly perfume as an act of humility. And this tender expression indicated Mary's devotion to Jesus and willingness to serve him. So then the next day was a Sabbath day. That's a day of rest. So this day isn't mentioned in the Gospels. The Lord traditionally spent the Sabbath day with his friends. Then we have the triumphal entry on Sunday. Some say it's Monday, but we won't quibble too much over that. And the four Gospels mention this in Matthew 21, 1-11, Mark 11, 1-11, Luke 19, 28-44, and also lastly, John 12, 12-19. So on the first day of the week, Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, fulfilling an ancient prophecy in Zechariah 9:9. I mean, at some point later, I'll do a series just on Zechariah 9:9. So the crowd welcomed him with the words of Psalm 118, verses 25 and 26, thus ascribing to him a messianic title as the agent of the Lord, the coming King of Israel. And then on Monday, it was a clearing of the temple. So Monday, we see that in Matthew 21, 12-17, Mark 11, 15-18, and also Luke 19, 45-48. So Jesus returned to the temple, and what he saw disturbed him. He found the court of the Gentiles full of traders and money changers making a hefty profit. So Jesus drove them out and overturned their benches and tables. And he did this actually twice. So Tuesday was a day of controversy and parables. So this is now 3 days before Good Friday. And that's in Matthew 21, 23-24:51, Mark 11, 27-13:37, and also Luke 20, verse 1-21:36. And then in Jerusalem, Jesus evaded the traps set by the priests. So on the Mount of Olives overlooking Jerusalem, he gave the Olivet Discourse. That's Tuesday afternoon. And then Jesus taught in parables and warned the people against the Pharisees. He predicted the destruction of Herod's great temple and told his disciples about future events, including his own return. So Wednesday was a day of rest. Although the Gospels don't mention this particular day, the counting of the days, if you look at Mark 14:1 and John 12:1, seems to indicate there was another day about which the Gospels record nothing. And then the Last Supper would have been Thursday evening, and this is mentioned in Matthew 26:17-30, Mark 14:12-26, Luke 22:7-23. So in upper room, Jesus prepared both himself and his disciples for his death. He gave the Passover meal a new meaning. So the loaf of bread and the cup of wine represented his body to be sacrificed and his blood soon to be shed. And so he instituted the Lord's Supper. So after singing a hymn, they went to Gethsemane, where Jesus prayed in agony, knowing what lay ahead for him. And then this crucifixion was on Friday, and that's mentioned in Matthew 27, Mark 15, Luke 22:66-23:56, And lastly, John 18:28-19:37. So following betrayal, arrest, desertion, six false trials, denial, condemnation, beatings, and mockery, Jesus was required to carry his cross to the place of the skull. If you look at Matthew 27:33, where he was crucified with two other prisoners. And Jesus' body was placed in the tomb before 6 p.m. on Friday evening when the Sabbath began. So all work stopped, and it lay in the tomb throughout the Sabbath. And of course, he rose from the dead Sunday morning, and the resurrection then is recorded in Matthew 28:1-10, Mark 16:1-8, Luke 24:1-49, and John chapter 20. So early in the morning, women went to the tomb and found that the stone closing the tomb's entrance had been rolled back. An angel told them that Jesus was alive and gave them a message. So Jesus appeared to Mary Magdalene in the garden, to Peter, to two disciples on the road to Emmaus. It would have been probably later in the afternoon on Friday, and later that day to all the disciples but Thomas. So now let's focus on the actual triumphal entry. And this is the formal presentation and the formal rejection of Jesus. So unfortunately, most of Israel was only interested in a physical kingdom rather than one with moral and spiritual characteristics. And you can look at the Sermon on the Mount. So Israel's impending rejection of her king is brought out clearly in Matthew's portrayal of the triumphal entry in Matthew 21:1-22. So even though this event fulfilled specific Old Testament prophecies like Daniel 9:25-26 and Zechariah 9:9, the people were only interested in a physical kingdom rather than a kingdom that also encompassed the moral and spiritual characteristics outlined in the temple in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5-7. So it's interesting that Matthew substitutes Isaiah 62:11 for "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion, shout in triumph, O daughter of Zion," because the nation had to have Christ pointed out to them since they did not recognize him. And this is from Stanley Toussaint's book, Behold the King, and also from Andy Woods' detailed Matthew summary. Okay, so it's kind of sad too that Israel only acknowledged Christ as a prophet, Matthew 21:1-11. So the cleansing of the temple established the nation's guilt, and the cursing of the fig tree showed the nation's guilt. So the cleansing temple established the guilt of her nation, of Israel, since the leadership of Israel had degraded God's house into simply a venue for merchandising. Although the children could recognize Christ as a Messiah, Israel's religious leadership could not, in Matthew 21:12-17. And Christ's cursing of the fig tree shows Israel guilt. While the nation had physical life, it showed no visible sign of repentance. Look at Matthew 3:7 and following. So here Matthew stresses Christ's teaching on faith to juxtapose genuine faith against Israel's lack of faith, if you look at Matthew 21:18-22. So the act of the temple cleansing also engendered hostility from the religious leaders, taking the form of a plot to kill Christ. If you look at Mark 11:18, and that was from Pastor Andy Woods' detailed Mark summary. That gives you an overview of the triumphal entry and an overview of the cleansing of the temple. So Matthew further emphasizes Israel's rejection of her king through a collection of questions and parables. And you see that in Matthew 21:23 through Matthew 22:46. So Christ's question of the religious leaders regarding John's authority exposed their guilt in rejecting John the Immerser. If the nation rejected the king's forerunner, The rejection of the king himself was imminent, in Matthew 21, 23-27. So in Christ's parable of the two sons, the son who disobeyed after saying that he would obey represents the nation's disobedience in contrast to the obedience of the righteous remnant. That's Matthew 21, 28-32. The parable of the tenants demonstrates the historical guilt of the nation in rejecting the prophets and their present guilt in rejecting their king. So such disobedience made the penalty of the covenant curses in the form of the coming AD 70 judgment inevitable. Matthew 21, 33-46. So in the parable of the wedding feast, Christ analogizes the non-attending invited guests to the nation. Such disobedience would invite the covenant curses of AD 70. Their sin is again juxtaposed against the backdrop of the believing remnant. Because the ones that were they're thrown out of the wedding feast, they were trying to enter the wedding with their own garments, as opposed to wearing the garments that the host provided. So our righteousness comes from faith in the Lord, not through our works. So the question involving taxation was designed either to get Christ to commit treason against Rome or to disenfranchise him from the Jewish commoners. And you see that in Mark 12, 13-17. The resurrection question was intended to trap him in an unsolvable theological dilemma, and that's Mark 12, 18-27. The question involving the most important commandment was designed to entangle him in the complex array of Pharisaical traditions. So anyone that's spent a lot of time or even a little bit of time studying the Pharisees can see how much they were just so entrenched in these traditions. And Christ's reciprocal question to them also demonstrated the nation's guilt by showing their inconsistency in rejecting his messianic authority. And that was from Andy Woods' Mark detailed summary. So an overview now of Sunday is the next day. Now this is what I'm going to read now is the NET Bible has a synthetic overview of all four Gospels. It puts all the Gospels together. And again, if you want to see this, just write me and you can see the PowerPoint. So the next day, as they approached Jerusalem near Bethpage in Bethany, at the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two of his disciples. That was from John 12:12 and Mark 11:1. So as Jesus and his men reached Bethpage, just east of Jerusalem, he motioned for John and Peter to complete an errand. So Bethpage marked the city's outer limits. Today, a Franciscan chapel commemorates the site. Excuse me. So Luke located what happened for his Gentile readers' benefit. Mark and John probably mentioned Bethany because it was a better-known town than Bethpage, though Bethany was slightly further east. So the mention of Mount Olivet, literally olive orchard, recalls the prophecy of Messiah's coming there in Zechariah 14:4. So the preparations to enter Jerusalem riding on a colt were to fulfill Zechariah 9:9. And that's also from Constable's notes. So the village opposite was evidently Bethpage, the one the disciples would have encountered after leaving Bethany. The colt was a young donkey, and the Mosaic law specified that an animal devoted to a sacred purpose had to be not used for ordinary purposes. The colt was unbroken, and Jesus could ride on it comfortably. These facts suggested that Jesus was a sinless man who was able to fulfill the Adamic covenant mandate to subdue the animals. And this is the only record of Jesus riding an animal. He was preparing to recreate the return of King David to Jerusalem in peace and humility, 2 Samuel 19 and 20, and the entrance of Solomon into Jerusalem for his enthronement. 1 Kings 1, 38-40. Compare Genesis 49, 10-11, which is a messianic prophecy. On these occasions, a king rode either a donkey or a mule. So we'll continue this talk on the Palm Sunday next time in the next part two of this series on Palm Sunday, Triumphal Entry. So thank you so much for joining me in today's Ask Prof. Brewer. I really do genuinely appreciate you taking the time to listen on today's session. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to send me an email at brewerhebrewprof@gmail.com, or you can text me at 848-226-4306. Shalom. Love you all.